Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage, on 620 CKRM.
Good afternoon, Saskatchewan. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage for Kinexus Arts Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19th and 20th at Kinexus Arts Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. What a show we got for you planned here today as we continue our chats with Wolseley folks to make sure that you're voting for Wolseley as Kraft Hockeyville coming up this weekend. We chat with Wolseley Mayor Gerald Hill later on in hour one. We'll be joined by some Regina Pats guests. Ken Schneider and Tanner Howe are going to be joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline in hour two. Also, Pats play-by-play dude Dante DiCaria going to be co-hosting the show with me from 4 o'clock on. So you get to hear from Dante DiCaria as well. And in hour three, we have Skylar Ackerman on the phone. Chatted with her earlier today about her decision to leave competitive curling. So we'll hear from Skylar Ackerman later on in hour three, as well as our Where Are They Now segment coming up in the end of the show. But for now, let's head on out to that Western Pizza Hotline and chat with TSN's Farhan Lalji. Farhan, how's it going here today?
Good, Ryan. Thanks for having me. Busy day. Canuck practice out at UBC, so a bit of a haul.
I'd say, where are we catching you now? Are we catching you on the highway between here and there?
Yeah, I'm just heading back from their practice. Just sent a bunch of notes. Finished a podcast a few minutes ago with a good friend of mine in Minnesota talking about the NFL, and now excited to talk to you, my friend.
Good to hear. Canucks still doing Canucks things out in the West, but Western Conference is tightening up. How much focus is there on locking up that top seed in the West for the organization?
Yeah, I think it matters. It'd be a pretty good feather in their cap. I mean, there's seven teams that are right there as far as the President's Trophy is concerned, right? And, you know, when you look at some of those teams in the Central Division and how well they're playing, you know, I think it would take a lot at this stage for the Canucks to not get it done in the Pacific, right? I mean, there's a bit of a gap there between them and Edmonton, but as far as the West is concerned, when you look at how well Colorado is playing and Dallas is playing and even Winnipeg getting a bounce back win yesterday against Edmonton, home ice could matter. I mean, and we've seen in some playoff years that it doesn't, right? That the road teams are less nervous and find a way to get it done. But from a Canucks standpoint, if they could, especially with what this organization's been through for the last 10 years, if they could finish first in the West and get home ice all the way through, depending on how far they go, I think it'd be a pretty big feather in their cap at this stage.
The Western Conference standings right now, it goes Dallas at 99, Vancouver 98, Colorado 97. The Canucks and Avalanche both have a game in hand in each case there. It's that tight, isn't it?
It is, and Vancouver plays Dallas tomorrow night, so that's going to be a huge part of this race. So, you know, it's good for these guys to be punching up there at this time of year. You know, when the Canucks made the playoffs during the bubble year, they didn't really make it in terms of having to win a bunch of games down the stretch to get there, right? I mean, they were kind of in by points percentage, but not in based on points, and got in and then won the play-in and all of that. But in terms of those big games at the end of the year to either get into the playoffs or just playoff positioning, they haven't had to go through any of that yet, right? So that's an important part of the lessons this young team still has to learn.
And then also chasing the New York Rangers across the continent, you could say, for that President's Trophy. Is again, I'm not a huge go for the President's Trophy kind of thing, win the big prize at the end of the year, that's the Stanley Cup, but does that really matter for the Canucks?
I don't know. You know, truthfully, I think the big thing is the division. Quite frankly, from my perspective, regardless of where the Canucks are and what their expectations should be, if this team wins a playoff round, and, you know, like, I think that's kind of the expectation given where they've come from, right? If they don't win a playoff round, it's a disappointment. If they win a playoff round, that's kind of the base for expectations, and then everything after that is gravy. So I don't know that anybody's looking that far ahead for a President's Trophy. I mean, the last time Vancouver won one, or earned one, I don't think you win a President's Trophy, but they earned it in 20, 12 and, you know, first-round playoff fodder to the Kings at that point, right? So I think right now Vancouver fans are kind of into the micro for what the next 10 games are going to look like, and then what a potential first two rounds would look like and who you'd play in round one and who you want to avoid. And, you know, if you check the play in a series.
Farhan, you there? Well, we may have lost Farhan Lalji here on the sports cage. Well, hello, Farhan, you there?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, you cut out there for a second, but all in all, I think we got you back, so we're good to go. My next question for you here, Farhan, Thatcher Demko put on LTIR retroactively. What have you heard on this situation?
Yeah, nothing new. They did it because it was a cap move. It kind of fits into the timeline we had talked about earlier, that it was going to be around 4 weeks or up to 4 weeks, and maybe it bleeds a bit beyond that, but I don't know that it will. So you miss 10 games, that gets you to April 6th, which was kind of the target date to begin with, so this gives them some cap flexibility to bring up some players because they were right up against it before, right? So now they can, you know, they just brought up Archdeep Baines from the minors, so they needed a bit of room to get that done. So to me, this isn't really an indicator that he's going to be out any longer than what we first thought.
Is there still hope that he's back before playoffs, get some games in before it's playoff time?
Yeah, April 6th is when he could return and play, and that would give him six games that he could still potentially play. And I would be surprised if he played all six. There is one. There might be a back-to-back in there, although that might be right before. But, yeah, so I don't know that he would play all six, but even if he got in four of those six and was back to normal practice and normal routines, you know, I think the organization feels that would be enough.
As long as it's not a Vegas loophole situation, I think I'll survive here. Farhan Lalji joining us here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness. You can't make it home. Call Western Pizza today. Again, we mentioned it off the top. It's insane how tight the West is getting. The Central teams all have, their top four teams, all have 90 or more points. And even the Pacific isn't exactly a lock, is it?
No, well, I mean, in terms of the bottom of that, I think we know the four teams that are going to make the playoffs in the Pacific. I don't know that anybody's catching L.A., Vegas, Edmonton near the bottom of that, but there's still some movement to be had there, right? I mean, L.A. beating Vancouver in the last game, they could vault over Edmonton. They're just a couple of points away, and, you know, Vegas just seems to, you know, be trending in the wrong direction. Even they had a 4-1 lead last night. They wound up blowing that in overtime to Nashville, so... You know, we all think that Vegas is going to go into the playoffs and get Hurdle back and get Stone back and everything's going to change. You know, more and more I hear that Stone might not be ready for the opening of round one, and Hurdle probably will, but he's playing poorly and they're not getting the goaltending that they've had in previous years. So I'd be nervous if I was a Vegas Knights fan, you know, but people certainly think that their championship pedigree is going to kick in once the playoffs start. Maybe it does, but yeah, certainly for spots 2, 3, and 4, I think there's still a lot of work to do there for any of those teams.
Switching gears a little bit, the NFL rule changes that were announced this week. What do you like? What do you don't like?
Well, you know, I like the fact that they're going to be able to make some reviews as it relates to intentional grounding and as it relates to roughing the passer. I think those are things that are a little more easy to detect, you know, on review. So we'll see what that looks like. I mean, generally more review is bad, but those penalties are so large and you know, they quite often decide games or at the very least momentum within a game. So I think to have those two part of it, I think is a good thing. I don't like the fact that they're giving it coach a potential third challenge if you get one of the first two right. I think it was at the right spot where it was. I don't like the thought that you could use it as an extra timeout, even though you can't use those challenges in the final 2 minutes of a half. But the kickoff is the interesting one, right? You know, the fact is that do you like seeing kickoffs or don't you like seeing kickoffs? And I know it's a big conversation in the CFL as well about where to go with that. And I like seeing returns, and I think the league is saying we want to see more returns, and we want to put value in a returner, and we want to make that decision before the draft so that if you want to draft a returner, now there's a need to. So it's going to look weird for all of us, right? We're used to players flying down the field and doing all of that and not lining up on the other side of the field. Yeah, it'll look different. It'll take some getting used to. But if it keeps returns in the game, I think it's a positive thing. And I wouldn't be shocked if the CFL trended in some direction as well with some potential changes in this league.
But how do you feel about those potential changes for the CFL game? Is that a step in the right direction for this league?
Well, look, it's about safety, and the hardcore CFL fans just have this thing about don't touch my game. Don't touch my game. My game is perfect. Your game's not perfect. And if there are safety issues that can be prevented, right? I mean, I think this kickoff is kind of a win-win. You know, I know most of what the CFL was talking about were other things about giving teams the option to take it at the 40 and things like that. That could potentially give you less kickoffs, but ultimately safety has to matter. And I haven't seen the CFL data. I've been told by the league office that their data is not significantly different than what the NFL data is in and around that. I do want to see the numbers so that, you know, I can trust that and feel good about it. But ultimately, you know, I saw a collision with Jack Hinsberger of the Lions and one of the Calgary players in a playoff game last year that was ugly, like just ugly. Now, ultimately, both players survived it, and it was all great. But you know, it could have gone the other way so easily. And I just think that if you can find a way to mitigate risk, I think you should do that. And so, I'm just not going to be one of those guys that just says, damn safety, don't touch my game. I think those players need, or those fans need to have their heads examined.
For sure, Farhan. On that note of safety, the hip drop tackle that the NFL owners... you know, okay, does, you know, okay, go ahead, ban it against what the NFLPA was recommending. So I guess, what are your thoughts on the banning of the hip drop tackle?
Well, you know, I think the numbers would suggest that it would happen once a game. But I think we're going to be talking about it a heck of a lot more than once a game. So I'm for safety. Interesting that the league voted it in unanimously, right? Like all 32 teams, you know, represented by owners or governors or presidents, all voted for this, and the PA didn't. Obviously, if you're the PA, half your members are defense, and they're not going to want this, and half your members are offense, and, you know, they're going to want it. And, you know, it's interesting that it's a byproduct of rules designed to enhance safety in terms of how you tackle, right? Because you don't want helmet-to-helmet collisions. We're teaching, you know, the rugby-style hawk tackle or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, you tackle on the backside of a defender, not the front side of a defender, and, you know, you turn and you roll. And what you don't want is you don't want the player to become weightless and drop on the back of someone's legs, right? So I just think it's so gray and so difficult for referees that are operating in the gray on so many other rules to get this right on a regular basis. I mean, technically, an offensive player like a running back is not supposed to lower his head into contact. How often do we see it? Like, we never see that called, and it happens all the time. So, you know, I saw the video that the NFL posted. Some of the examples kind of made me raise my eyebrows that you're going to call that. But then the numbers show that it only happens once a game. So I'll see if they get it right and if it only happens once again, but I just think we're going to be talking about it a lot more. So we'll see.
Well, again, you can't hit high, you can't hit low. Obviously, those are the obvious ones. And now it's, you can have them wrapped up, but you can't get them to drop, right? Like, tackling Derrick Henry is going to be next to impossible now, isn't it?
Well, like you're allowed to still cut someone's legs out. And, you know, that has its own safety concerns. But you'll probably see a lot more of that, you know, what we like to call ankle biting when it comes to little guys trying to tackle big guys in space. You know, but then, you know, like, guys don't often like doing that because they don't want to run the risk of getting embarrassed otherwise, right? Because, you know, if that happens and you get hurtled, or if you mistime it and you get stiff-armed to the ground, you know, that prevents a little bit of that. But yeah, it is harder and harder for defensive players to find the right strike zone, isn't it?
For sure. In other news, for the NFL, they're going to be playing a few games on Christmas Day, I think I saw, which is a Wednesday this year. After all we hear about players hating the short week to play on Thursday. I can't imagine this is going to go over well with players. Can you?
Well, I would imagine you're going to see buys at the front and back end of this, right? The teams aren't going to play on a Sunday. They'll get 10 days, and then, you know, you'll have a, you know, that'll be their game for that week, and then they'll have a bye the following week. I think you will see that for the teams that play on Christmas Day. But I would imagine they'll try to do that wherever possible.
Farhan Lalji from TSN, thank you so much for taking the time here to join us here on the Sports Cage.
All right, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Farhan Lalji joining us from Vancouver on the Western Pizza Hotline. For Western Pizza, perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. We'll chat about some of the new news headlines coming up here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM when we come back.
You're listening to the radio home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Hour one of the Sports Cage on a Wednesday here on 620 CKRM. We're here for Kinexus Arts Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19 and 20th at Kinexus Arts Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. If you're wanting to join in on the show, text us on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. 306-936-6262 is the number to text. Again, for Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, CapitalFordLincoln.com. So, WHL playoffs kicking off tomorrow already. Looking forward to seeing what this first round produces. Don't think there'll be a ton of upsets by any means for the WHL playoffs, but... you know, the season series between Brandon and Moose Jaw intrigues me, right? As now they match up in a playoff series, 3-6, and Brandon Moose Jaw split that season series as well. And I mean, Moose Jaw obviously built to win this year. That's going to be a pretty interesting series for me. The one that gets started tomorrow is Saskatoon hosting Prince Albert. And then on Friday, you see the rest of the series really begin with Game 1. Swift Current going to host Lethbridge in Game 1 of that series, 2-7. Of course, Moose Jaw versus Brandon, the 3-6. And then Medicine Hat Red Deer, the 4-5. Those are the Eastern Conference teams that will be playing in the WHL playoffs this year. In the SJHL, well, we have a bit of a situation on our hands brewing in that in those series with Humboldt and Weyburn and Melfort and Estevan, as Estevan and Weyburn both won their games last night. So game four is this evening in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, so looking forward to seeing what they can put together for Game 4 tonight. The Battlefords and Flint Flon can both move on tonight. They are both up 3-0 in their series in the SJHL playoffs. So I think, do you go with rest or do you go with rust? Right? I mean, that's the thing, right? If you get done this series right away, you're off for a while, potentially, waiting for, you know, either Humboldt or Weyburn to win their series, or Estevan or Melfort to win their series, right? It's an interesting perspective, right? I'm not sure. Like, do you want the games to stay active, or do you want the rest to, you know, just relax a little bit while we wait for other teams to finish up their first round series? On the other side of the news break, we will hear from the mayor of Wolseley. His name is Gerald Hill, and chatted with him earlier today about the bid Wolseley's making to become Kraft Hockeyville, the first Saskatchewan community to be Kraft Hockeyville, potentially. Voting starts at 7 o'clock on Friday, goes right until 3 o'clock local time here on Saturday. So make sure you have those computers handy, and Or your phone. I even voted on my phone before. It's not that hard either. So make sure we're voting tons for Wolseley, the smallest community among the Final Four. So hopefully they can get the honor of Kraft Hockeyville. We'll hear that interview after the break here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Saskatchewan's best coverage of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is on the Sports Cage, right here on the mighty 620 CKRM.
Welcome to the Sports Cage here on 620 CKRM. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Alan Lee pushing the buttons behind the board on a Wednesday. Brought to you by the Kinexus Art Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19th and 20th at Kinexus Art Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. So as we mentioned off the top here of the show, Wolseley going to become, trying to become Saskatchewan's first Kraft Hockeyville. Wilcox has tried, Humboldt has tried, LaFleche. I know I'm going to forget a bunch of these, right? Pence, Lumsden has tried. There's been great bids all throughout the last few years here, but unfortunately, a Saskatchewan team has not won. Wolseley trying to do it, trying to pay for a new ice plant, which run anywhere between $600,000 to $800,000. So that's a pretty penny. The town's at least raised $100,000 for this thing. So you got some money there right now, but $250,000 and an NHL preseason game? That'd add to the collection plate real quick. So chatted with the mayor of Wolseley earlier today, Gerald Hill. Here's how that conversation went. Joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline today, Gerald Hill, the mayor of Wolseley. Gerald, how's it going here today?
Hey, pretty good. And you?
Doing fairly well. What's this week been like for you here, Gerald, with all this Kraft Hockeyville business going on in Wolseley?
Oh, she's been a busy one. Yeah, it's been very busy. Our volunteers are going 100 miles an hour, and the support from around Saskatchewan has just been phenomenal to assist us bring this thing home.
When you first heard about this bid, what were your thoughts?
Boy, we're going to have a tough slug. We're the smallest community, and we knew going into it that Saskatchewan hasn't won it, so it was going to be a challenge. And we're fighting hard to bring the goal, to make her happen. So
is it correct then, Gerald? Wolseley is the smallest community to apply for Kraft Hockeyville out of Saskatchewan.
Well, I can't say it's the smallest to apply, but in currently of the four that are in the final, we are the smallest at 850. I believe Enderby is about 2,400. Elliott Lake, I think, is around the same amount. I think it might even be a little bigger than that. And then Cochrane is, 35,000 plus. So yeah, of the final four, we are definitely one of the smallest. We are the smallest one this year, so.
I see. And maybe talk about, that support you've gotten from across Saskatchewan on this. I understand folks from my hometown in Lumsden have even reached out. Past finalists from all across Saskatchewan have chimed in and chipped in and said that they'll be supporting your bid.
Absolutely. excuse me, Lumsden's been very gracious and telling us, what they did and the support. The other communities are, I'm calling them our alumni. I believe there's seven other communities that had been in the Final Four running, and so far nobody's been successful in Saskatchewan, and this year we want to bring it home. So local and hockey associations across the province have been lending the support and asking for their communities to assist us to bring this home to Saskatchewan. We've got a mascot. Major was just in Melville last night, harassing all the fans at the Millionaire Games last night and bringing some notice to our bid and asking for the support. So the paths have been great all over the province. You name it, we're getting lots of assistance from our great Saskatchewan people.
That's great to hear. Maybe describe the hockey community for the folks outside of Woolsey that may not know, because it's a pretty good hockey town, isn't it?
It is. You know, like we've got a long history. You know, not only hockey, but you know, in the figure skating aspect as well too. Like a lot of the kids that first touched the ice in Woolsey have gone on to have long careers. We got Tristan Taylor that currently is high up in the doubles within Skate Canada and the figure skating group there. We've had lots of hockey players that go on to different communities across Western Canada and into the United States. And we've got, you know, the little guys that are just learning to skate right now, the U7s, U9s, U13s. We got some joint teams with Grenfell. We got kids that you know, kind of age out in our groups. You know, it's a typical small town. Some of the groups, we don't have enough kids. So they participate in our neighboring communities. We've got a junior C team that's been up and running. I think now this is year number 5. And so every year we're seeing more and more usage in that facility. So it's coming back. You know, we're getting, with the influx of folks moving to Woolsey, they're bringing their kids. It's a great place to live, you know, play your sports. And we're seeing it, with the growth in the kids at the rink, in the schools, that sort of thing. So,
Gerald Hill joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Gerald, hockey's story in Woolsey, you mentioned it a little bit, but it did see a resurgence in the mid-2010s. I was wondering if you could walk us through that.
Well, yeah, it's, typical small town, you know, the population shrinks, the kids, smaller families, that sort of thing. So it was to the point where it was, you know, there was a question whether the rink would even be feasible to put ice in just for general skating. And, junior C teams 5 years ago, when they got that up and running, that really sparked some interest with the local kids, and then we got everybody wanting to, you know, put the skates on and have a go at it. So the little guys. So yeah, it's one of those. We had a huge hockey community going here, and then kind of petered off, and now we're seeing a resurgence in it. So I certainly hope that's going to be the continuing trend within our community, and there's nothing to suggest right now that it isn't. So,
and what would the funding go towards if you do become Crafts Hockeyville?
Well, our plan, some people may or may not know, is we're on year 44 of a 25-year plant. So it's probably one of the oldest plants, if not the oldest plant in Saskatchewan, Freon-based plant. So we know that it's on its last, we're babying that thing along. And good on the volunteers that are doing that. But, you know, at some day she's not going to start on us, and we're not going to have ice in that rink then. So the community has undertaken last fall, we undertook a net zero study to determine, efficiencies and reduce our greenhouse emissions and footprint within the facility. So that study's underway, and our goal is to put the most efficient plant in there that we can, that the community can afford. So that in 50 years, that thing is hopefully still up and running. So yeah, that's the, but, $250,000, that's a pretty good down payment on that. So
I'd say, and those plants run for anywhere between $600,000 to $800,000 is what I was seeing. So any penny is needed, that's for sure.
Well, that's right. So that's We're looking between $600,000 and $800,000, like you said. So, depending on what's needed, and it's going to reduce the operational costs. So one thing we've discovered that if we continued on with the current facility the way it is now with the operational costs, we've determined that within 10 years we could not keep the doors open with the plant that's in there. And I that's not unique to us. That'll be with any of the communities in the smaller areas. Is just the overhead costs of running those things are phenomenal. So, but we're hoping that when we win this thing, that $250,000, that's going to go towards that plant, and we'll put it in. So far, the community has raised just a little over $100,000 locally, and we're going to be looking for some corporate sponsorship, regardless of what happens, to see if we can get this thing up and have a new plant for next season. Whether that's a realistic goal or not, I sure hope it is. But we're certainly heading, seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Anyway, if we can get this win, it'll be just awesome.
Absolutely, Gerald. And as part of Kraft Hockeyville and the contest, it is you get a NHL preseason game. Maybe not in Wolseley's rink if it's too small, but maybe somewhere locally. Who are the two NHL teams you'd like to see in that preseason game?
Well, I'd like to see the Jets and the Oilers. Given that they're our neighbors, and we've made tentative plans with the Brandt Center to host it in Regina. We want to share this win with Saskatchewan. We need Saskatchewan to help us bring this win here to Saskatchewan. So we want to share that win with Saskatchewan, and the Brandt Center is where we hope to hold that game when we win it. And so help us out there, Saskatchewan. Let's bring this thing home.
Absolutely. Folks can vote for the town of Wolseley between Friday at 7 a.m. to Saturday at 3 p.m. I imagine the term super voter has never been floated around Wolseley more than this week.
Not even remotely. So, our volunteer base has got the got plans to set up in the rink. If you're a little rickety like I am when it comes to computers and things, they're going to have 35 computers set up in there, and there's going to be volunteers there to help you if you're a little concerned on whether you're going to the right thing and pressing the right button. And that's gonna open up, I believe it's 11:30 on Friday, and we'll run. We'll be open right through until the following about 1:30 on Saturday night. So we'll get a lot of volunteers that are gonna be putting a lot of time in there. So by all means, come down and wish them well and vote, vote, vote.
Absolutely, Gerald. Gerald Hill, the mayor of Wolseley, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the Sports Cage.
Hey, thank you very much. And to the listeners out there, if you haven't registered yet, go to crafthockeyville.ca. She's pretty easy to sign up. I'd suggest you sign up ahead of time, and then voting is unlimited, once voting opens up. So let's bring this Saskatchewan spirit to this thing. It's time for Saskatchewan to win Kraft Hockeyville. And I know we can do it. We can do it.
Absolutely, Gerald. We can do it. And let's do it. That was Mayor Gerald Hill from Wolseley joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Hopefully we can get Wolseley that funding for Kraft Hockeyville. I know the finalists still get some money anyway, but that's not the same, right? $250,000, hey, I'd do pretty cool things with $250,000. Maybe even donate a little bit to the Wolseley hockey facility to get their ice plant going. But, definitely a worthwhile cause. And all you got to do, basically, is sit down on a, lazy good Friday and, just tap vote a few times, confirm you're not a robot a few more times, and then keep tapping vote. That's all you got to do to help out the town of Wolseley get Kraft Hockeyville. And as Gerald Hill mentioned, They are the smallest finalist left in this 2024 edition of the Kraft Hockeyville contest. So they're up against it. So they really need a province of a million strong to help them out here. So hopefully our small town Saskatchewan spirit is across the province and helping out Wolseley for a day and a half, basically, on the weekend. On the other side, we will have the SJHL report from the busiest play-by-play guy in the SJHL, Benny Walchuk, is next on 620 CKRM's The Sports Cage.
Nobody covers your team like our team. This is The Sports Cage on the mighty 620 CKRM.
We're about to wrap up hour one of The Sports Cage here on 620 CKRM. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Alan Lee pushing the buttons behind the board for us today. The Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League playoffs. Getting into the nitty-gritty of round one as two teams tonight could move on. And we'll find out if the Balfour's North Stars are moving on tonight. They are up 3-0 on their series over the Melville Millionaires. Flin Flon Bombers also have a chance to sweep the Kindersley Clippers, as Kindersley is down 3-0 in that series as well. In the other two series, Humboldt in Weyburn tonight, the home teams have won all the games in that series, as well as in Estevan between the Mustangs from Melfort and the Estevan Bruins. The home teams have won every single game in those series. So we'll see if Humboldt can be road warriors tonight. Same with the Melfort Mustangs. And with more on the SJHL playoffs, let's send it to our good friend out of Yorkton, Mr. Benny Walchuk, with today's SJHL report.
It's time for the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League reports on the Sports Cage. I'm Benny Walchuk. Night number 3 of the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League playoffs saw a couple of teams get back in their quarterfinal series, while a couple of teams have been pushed to the brink of elimination. Keegan Little scored the game-winning goal late stages of the third period. He also had two assists to lead the Estevan Bruins to a 4-3 win over the Melfort Mustangs at Affinity Place. Melfort still leads that best-of-seven series 2-1. Up Highway 39 last night, Jackson Ruthven scored the game-winning goal just over 2 minutes left in regulation as the Weyburn Red Wings slipped by the Humboldt Broncos 5-3. Cage Newen scored twice, lead the Broncos offensively. Weyburn still trails that best-of-seven quarterfinal 2-1. Local product Carter Anderson netted 2 goals and 1 assist to put the Flin Flon Bombers 1 win away from the SJHL's Final Four. They beat the hometown Kindersley Clippers 5-2 at the West Central Event Center, the first home playoff game for the Clippers since 2019. While in Melville at the CN Community Center, the Millionaires had a 3-1 lead early in the third period, but the defending champion Battleford North Stars scored 4 unanswered in the third period to come back to stun the Millionaires in the Rail City by a score of 5-3. Two-time SJHL MVP Keon Bell scored 3 goals and added 2 assists. He also scored the game-winning goal with 2:52 left in regulation time. So the Millionaires and Clippers will battle for their seasons tonight as they host game number 4, trailing those series 3-0. Meanwhile, the Estevan Bruins and Weyburn Red Wings will be back on home ice tonight for game number 4, looking to even up their series at 2-apiece. Just a reminder to vote for the RBC's Community Ambassador with 18 days remaining. Finalists include Malvern Mustang defenseman Leith Olison, LaRonge Ice Bowl forward Jacob Cassette, Keegan Little of the Estevan Bruins, and Flin Flon Bombers local product Joey Lees. You can vote for the RBC Community Ambassador in the SJHL at sjhl.ca. For today's Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League report on the Sports Cage, I'm Benny Walchuk.
Thank you so much, Benny Walchuk, the SJHL's busiest play-by-play guy in the league, as he covers not one but two teams in the SJHL, and then not one but two leagues, as he covers the Swan Valley Stampeders of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League as well. Pulling in Alan Lee into the show here. Alan, how's it going here today, buddy?
Oh, it's going good. I'm happy to be on, and it's I feel like the show is going well. So
far,
can't be happier. Yeah,
no fires have been lit so far.
Fair point. Yeah.
Yes, we're good so far. Alan, a conversation I've always wanted to have on the Sports Cage here today. You told me before the break you're a Boston Bruins fan.
Yeah.
How unfortunate.
Oh, come on.
As you see the Leafs hat on my head.
Yeah.
a question I've always had for anybody I ever talk to. How do you choose the team you cheer for?
Well, here's the thing. I guess you can say I was a little bit of a bandwagoner, because basically when they were in the Stanley Cup in 2010 and facing Vancouver, everyone I knew was cheering for the Canucks. And for some reason, younger me just wanted to cause chaos and just pick the other team. And like, and I just, that's why I picked the Bruins. And ever since then, like, I took joy in picking the Bruins, especially because I knew a lot of people like yourself who are fans of the Leafs. And then I was, it pains me to say it, not really, but like, I like to rub salt in the wound sometimes when like those guys are in the play, when you guys are in the playoffs with against us.
Yeah, it doesn't go well for us all the time, does it? It's just kind of that way. I chose being a Leafs fan in large part due to family, right? My older brother was a Leafs fan. My dad, my grandfather, all Leafs fans. So it's genuinely seemed like they weren't going to bring me home from the hospital when I was born unless I was a Leafs fan. So that's why it just kind of sort of happened that way.
Oh, yeah.
So let us know on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. Who do you cheer for? Why do you cheer for them? It could be any sport. Could be football. Could be hockey. Could be baseball, right? Yeah, I'm a Phillies fan. 80% of this town is Jays fans. Let us know why you cheer for who you cheer for on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line, 306-936-6262. Hopefully we can read some texts after the news right here on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Welcome into hour two of The Sports Cage on a Wednesday here on 620 CKRM. I'm your host, Ryan McNally, and today's show brought to you by Connexus Arts Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19 and 20 at Connexus Arts Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. Joined by Regina Pat's play-by-play guru, communications guy, Dante DiCaria, joining us here on the show. Dante, how's it going here today?
It's a very exciting day. The Regina Pats winning the U.S. Priority Draft Lottery. They're going to pick first overall in this year's U.S. Draft, so that's exciting. And also some good news, the Kelowna Rockets will not get the first pick in this year's WHL Prospects Draft. Of course, they did have Regina's first round pick this year. It drops actually down to four. So a pretty good day for Pats fans, I would think.
I'd say, Dante. And we're going to get Pats assistant coach Ken Schneider on the line here shortly. But Pats able to get that number one pick in the U.S. Priority Draft. Dante, I guess, how big is that for the Pats?
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's definitely a positive, because unfortunately a lot of things didn't go right for the Regina Pats this year in terms of the win-loss department, and I guess in terms of not having a first-round pick for the 2024 WHL Prospects Draft. But I know the Western Hockey League has had its difficulties recruiting these players to come to the league. There's only been, I think, six players that have signed WHL contracts from that U.S. Priority Draft, but hopefully I have a lot of confidence in Al Miller and the scouting staff to get one of these players signed and under contract.
And we are joined by Pat's assistant coach Ken Schneider on the Western Pizza Hotline. Kenny, first off, how do you respond to getting that number one pick in the U.S. draft?
Well, it's pretty exciting news for us, to be honest with you. Similar to what Dante had to say, it was a tough, difficult season for us. And with the fact that we don't have a first-round pick on the Canadian side of things, this is a really important piece for us going forward.
Kenny, I also wanted to just get your thoughts on, the season overall as it was.
Yeah, I think the way it started was great, to be quite honest with you. I think there was probably several teams in the league that were a little surprised by how well we did in the first quarter of the year, and then with the fact that we were looking to grow our team and build a foundation, we moved some people, and I think over that period of time it takes new players a certain amount of time to get adapted and accustomed to new coaching staff, new place to play, and that whole piece. And so I think we started to falter a bit. We hung in there till late, and then, of course, we had our road trip to the U.S., and that would really determine our fate, and unfortunately, it didn't go very well.
I think something that Al Miller talked about with the media after the season came to a close, and he spoke about it with myself and Kelly Rempel on Pats TV on Tuesday, was the fact that the home and road splits is something that needs to improve going into next year, and I think you guys as a coaching staff understand that as well. Just 5 victories on the road this season, and I believe 17 on home ice. The Pats were a very exciting team on home ice. We're in a lot of really close games, but unfortunately only put together 5 victories on the road. I know the fantastic and admirable John Paddock always used to tell me when I would ask him about home and road splits is that a rink's a rink. It shouldn't matter where you play in terms of getting those 2 points. Kenny, I guess, how would you evaluate your home and road splits over the course of the season? And is that something that you as a hockey operations department are going to look deep into?
Yeah, I mean, you just can't be satisfied with only winning 4 games on the road. I mean, that you know, you're playing 34 of those games away from home, so You have to, you know, be able to compete every night on the road, and you know, I believe that you need to win at least half of those games on the road in order to give yourself that opportunity to be successful and make the playoffs.
Building off that, I know Pats fans are extremely excited to see where Tanner Howe goes in this year's NHL draft. Also, maybe Jackson and Corbin Vaughn as well. How would you describe just all those 3 players' progression heading into this offseason that's going to be extremely important for them as they come back next year with the Regina Pats, but also into a very exciting time for them and their families as they look to hear their name called at the NHL draft?
Yeah, you know, I think in Tanner's case, you know, it's sort of been on the it's been sort of highlighted for a while now, and Tanner's played extremely well over the last 3 years here, and he's certainly deserving of the opportunity. I think his game was excellent again this year. He took on a new role as the captain of our team, which is, you know, there's a lot to that, and only being 18 years old, you know, that's a lot to ask of a young player. And, you know, I thought he did an admirable job. I think he's still learning some of the aspects of leadership. But it was exciting. It's exciting for him and his family, and he's got a great opportunity here come end of June. And as for the Bond boys, I think, you know, we probably saw more progression out of them. Just the fact that, you know, last year ice time was a lot more limited for them and opportunity. This year, of course, they gained a lot more ice time, were given a lot more responsibility, and had Corbin not been injured, his game was really rocketing, and he was playing extremely well, and we believe in him, and we think he's going to be a great player. It was just a real tough setback for the team, too, overall. And I think, you know, it'd be great for him to get that opportunity to be drafted. Jackson met some goals this year in terms of scoring. He had some expectations that he met, and we were pleased for him. And I think we saw some real strong improvement on his part. And again, I think both of those young players are going to be important pieces and leaders in our group as we move forward. And, you know, I think the important piece is, though, when you're talking about the draft is, you know, people get pretty excited about these things, but at the end of the day, whether they do or don't, you know, they're still continuing to build on their profession, and there's opportunity for them regardless of whether they're drafted this year or not.
Kenny, how long do you hold on to a season like this one before moving on to the next?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I know I'm still holding on to it, and I know the other coaches and our general manager and CEO are not pleased with the outcome. We are looking internally at what's gone on, and you know, I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's something that's, you know, going to be there come next fall, and it's and over the course of the summer, I think it's going to be what drives us to you know, be better overall, so yeah, I don't think that, to be quite honest with you, that I think it's a motivator for us to have finished the season the way it did. Just sends us a message that we've got a lot of work to do.
Kenny, in the month of August, Tristan Fry, yourself as a coaching staff, and some alumni and current players are going to be holding a very exciting youth hockey academy called the Cadets Academy, so Regina Pat's Minor Hockey Academy, in which you guys will be running on-ice sessions for U9 and U11 players from August 12th to 16th. Registration opening April 1st. Kenny, for yourself, I know Tristan does a fantastic job, but if you have the opportunity to be involved in this for yourself, you also have a ton of experience with youth kids as well. You've coached for a very long time. Tell us a little bit about what excites you about this hockey camp that the Pats have now decided to unveil over the last week or so, with the registration opening up soon, and maybe just a little bit about your coaching background.
Yeah, thanks, Donnie. When I start to think about hockey schools and that sort of thing, it goes way back to when my oldest boy first started, when you're a parent and somebody that's been in hockey, you just sort of, it naturally becomes something you think about. And so we started up my own hockey school many, many years ago in Brandon, and started working with young people from ages 5 right up till, I guess it was probably the U18 sort of era, and worked with both boys and girls. So I've had exposure to both genders, and it was an awesome experience. I think it's great for kids just to to be able to have that time with coaches and players at our level. And I think probably the more important thing is it's important for us to build that relationship with the communities and the community of Regina and surrounding area that support our program, and it's an opportunity for us to reach out to young people and their families and have some fun in the summer when things aren't as serious. And for me, more than anything, it's more of an opportunity just for kids to have some fun, spend some time in the sun outside of the rink after, and enjoy the experience.
Ken Schneider, the Pats assistant coach, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Kenny, what does an off season look like for a WHL assistant coach?
Well, again, we're going to dive back into some of the, and look at and review some of the video and so on that we've captured over the course of the year. Obviously, we're going to have some role in the upcoming Western Hockey League draft. Obviously, our scouting team is mainly responsible for that, but we will be there in support of those guys. And, we're excited to be around the table when we start calling out names. So that'll be an important aspect. Beyond that, it's a matter of us really just sort of connecting as a group, the coaching staff. We'll spend some time just sort of reviewing our processes and things that we think we can do better. So there'll be some time spent on our day-to-day operation at the rink, and those things take time to kind of weed through and to sift through and to determine what works well, what doesn't work well. Do we have any new ideas that might help us and springboard us forward? And and then we start to look forward to the development camp that we'll host with our prospects, and that I think happens at the end of May, early June. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important piece for us. It's an opportunity for us to showcase to the parents and the player prospects about the Regina Pats and who we are and what we're all about, and that's a vital component to our the future players that will eventually come and play for us. So we're going to do all we can to promote the program, and that's a vital piece of that. And it also obviously gives us an opportunity to have another look at our players, to see how they progressed and how things are going forward as the fall camp will approach. And then obviously we'll have a little time off, have a little bit of a rest, decompress, recharge, and then get ready for camp in the fall. We'll have the obviously the hockey school that we just discussed in mid-August,
And then shortly after that, we'll be back to work, and we'll be at training camp and getting ready for another season.
Kenny, I obviously work with you a lot and spend a lot of time with you, and I've spent a lot of time with you over the last 3 years, and obviously cherish our friendship and the relationship that you and I have built. And the one thing that I've noticed from being around you is that you really focus in on building those relationships with not only the people in the Regina Pats organization and in the community, but also, most importantly, the players as well. You really truly value that personal factor when it comes down to your coaching style and how you're going to get through to these players. As far as the offseason goes, Kenny, is it important for you and the coaching staff and even the management staff to continue to keep tabs on the players this offseason to make sure that they're hitting their goals this year, but also to check in on them on, you know, how they're doing, etc.? Is that something that you and the coaching staff will potentially be doing this offseason, is kind of just, you know, connecting with some of the players? I'm not saying every single day, but just kind of, you know, make, you know, asking how they're doing and how their offseason is going and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess that's something that I neglected to mention, but absolutely, it's a component that we take seriously. I think for us, it's often it's just an opportunity to touch base with players, see how their summer's going. Obviously, a little bit of a check-in, but more importantly, it's the human side of it for me, and that, I think that's extremely important, because the relationship that you build with your players and a good relationship is one that's really important, you know, when you're back together and you're working together, that you can count on that relationship to be strong, because, you know, things don't always go right, as we've experienced this past year. And when it going gets tough, it's important to have a good relationship and rapport with your players so that, you know, you can come out of it the other side and in a positive light. So, yes, and that, you know, a lot of that will come from us as coaches. Certainly Brad will be heavily involved in that aspect, and we may even and we will even stop in on certain players and meet with them and see how they're doing and check out, you know, sort of the facilities they're working out in and their on ice stuff as well. So there's those visits. Obviously we're not going to get to every player, but it's certainly an aspect of the summer program.
Kenny, obviously Regina is the lone Saskatchewan team out of the WHL playoff picture. How closely are you going to be watching these WHL playoffs?
Yeah, I'll be watching closely. You know, I think it's going to be interesting. There's some really good teams in the Eastern Division here, and the Saskatchewan teams that are participating are all good hockey teams, and so it'll be interesting to watch. And, you know, just to sort of get a sense of, okay, what are the things we need to do in order for us to be here next year, next spring, competing and getting ready for game one of the playoffs. So, it's important to keep our eyes on it. And to, you know, we're also paying attention to what's going on at the Bantam level. We're interested in what's happening at the U18 level. There's going to be a Western Regional Championship in Winnipeg coming up here in early April. I know that we'll have people there, and myself might be attending. And, you know, so outside of the WHL, we still have a lot of other people playing hockey and prospects, and so it's important for us to be, you know, spending some time watching them through playoff hockey, which is the most important hockey of the season.
Kenny, last question for you, at least on my end. I just wanted to ask you about how you've kind of grown as a coach over the last 3 years as an assistant coach with the Regina Pats organization. I know you have a lot of experience, you know, dating back to scouting with the Regina Pats, coaching at the senior level, coaching at the U18 AAA level. So how have you felt you've developed over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dante. You know, I think probably for me, there was certainly a learning curve. The first couple of years in particular, Brad's been really great in terms of helping me and you know, the sort of the video aspect of the game, probably more so than anything, you know, being an older guy and not having access at the U18 level when I was coaching at that, to have a lot of video opportunity. That's something that's certainly improved a lot, and even, you know, to the extent of strategy and you know, sort of how we play. I've always fundamentally have a pretty good idea how the game's played, but you know, if you don't
if you don't grow with the game and it changes quickly, you can really get out of step. And so, you know, I felt that, you know, being here for the last 3 years has given me that opportunity to really see how the game's being played today. It's certainly a lot different than the game that was played when I was playing back in the early 80s. So if you stay in that mode, you're going to fall behind and you're not going to have a lot of success. But I think those are probably the things that have been the most important for my development.
Kenny, time always the enemy. Thank you so much for taking the time here to join us on the Western Pizza Hotline today on the Sports Cage.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure, guys.
Hey, great to have you here. That was Ken Schneider, Pat's assistant coach, here on the Western Pizza Hotline on the Sports Cage. Time to break for news. When we come back, we'll hear from Pat's captain, Tanner Howe, next on 620 CKRM.
It's time to step into the radio octagon. You're tuned to the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio, 620 CKRM.
Hour two of the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage, brought to you by Kinexus Art Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19th and 20th at Kinexus Art Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. Ryan McNally, Dante DiCaria, taking you through a fun afternoon of sports talk, and we continue to kind of, I guess, wrap up the Regina Pats season. I guess that's the best way to put it, as we welcome on the Western Pizza Hotline Pats captain Tanner Howe, an A-plus pizza delivery guy, I must say, because back-to-back years, Tanner, you've delivered pizza to my door or helped ring it in at the Albert Street South location. Tanner, are you there? Did the joke just flop?
I don't think he's there.
Oh, no. That's a brutal way to intro a phone interview where, well, the guy doesn't answer.
The one thing I will say, I'm pretty sad, Tanner, that I never got to. Oh.
Yeah.
Tanner, are you there? Can barely hear you, Tanner. Are you there? Hello?
The one thing I will say is I'm pretty frustrated that I never got to deliver pizza to your house. I was never in Tanner Howe's group.
I guess not. But, no, in 2022... Connor, yeah. Bedard, Tanner Howe show up on my doorstep.
Would have been 2023 because we did.
That would have been 23. Yes. Yeah. My bad. Yeah. 2024.
Have a heart night.
Yeah, for Have a Heart Night. Great, yeah, cause, by the way.
Yeah.
Western Pizza, great to help out with that.
Yeah, donations going to the Heart and Stroke Foundation.
Exactly. 2024, I figure, you know what? We're not going to wait for a Pats player to come get it. I'll go support the cause myself and just, you know, go pick up my pizza. And who rings up the pizza? Tanner Howe at the Albert Street South location. So great to see. All-star on the ice, all-star helping out ringing up some pizzas too. Tanner, are you there? Tanner is struggling to connect with us here.
Must be that Wi-Fi on the fishing lodge. I know he's ice fishing, I think.
That might be it. Hey,
he's
Tanner.
In and out.
Tanner, are you there?
Little technical difficulties.
Just a couple technical difficulties here.
He must be ice fishing. I think that's what's going on.
That could be. Hey, may as well get a couple fish in before they got pull the shacks off the ice too, right? Obviously, north of the Highway 16, you can pull them off a little later here in Saskatchewan. So why not catch some fish while you can? Great opportunity, though, to check in on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line, which, of course, brought to you by Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, CapitalFordLincoln.com. We asked the question a little earlier on. Who do you cheer for? Why do you cheer for them? Joseph in Regina texting in. The first time he saw Bobby Orr play, he became a Bruins fan, even though six other family members disagreed because they were Habs fans. And in Joseph's words, their mistake. So thank you so much for texting in, Joseph. Hey, you, let us know. Who do you cheer for? Why do you cheer for them? That's the question of the day here on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. 306-936-6262. That is the number to text in. Dante, I know you're an avid sports fan. Who do you cheer for? Why do you cheer for them?
Well, it really depends.
It could be any sport. Talk any sport.
Well, for me, I'm a part Toronto Blue Jays fan and a part San Francisco Giants fan for baseball. Oh, yeah.
Fair. Yeah. So why the half and half there, Dante?
Why the half and half?
Yeah.
Well, I got to have an NL team and I got to have an AL team.
Fair, I guess.
So one thing I do want to mention, I had a great time last year, last night, drafting my team for this year's baseball league. I'm coaching a U13 baseball league this year, so we had our draft last night.
That's good.
And that was a lot of fun.
That's exciting there, Dante. I'll tell you, I cheer for the Philadelphia Phillies for baseball because unofficially I was part of the Roy Halladay trade. I've told that story a few times on the Sports Cage, but again, that's my baseball team of choice is the Philadelphia Phillies, just simply because of Roy Halladay. I've stuck with it through a really tough decade right after that, and it all ended up smoothly. Now as my team is now known as the slow pitch team you want to play and lose to by about 10. So
let's try again here.
All right, Tanner Howe, are you there?
He is not.
He is not there. I guess we just continue to chat. We saw the playoff bracket for the Western Hockey League. Any surprises for you, Dante, heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't think there's really too many surprises. I think the toughest series in the Western Hockey League is probably going to be Red Deer and Medicine Hat, as far as I'm concerned.
See, Brandon and Moose Jaw split that season series. And they're down to the 3-6 playoff matchup in the Eastern Conference. Are you going to be watching that series with a great amount of detail? Possibly?
Maybe, but I think my favorite series is probably going to be Moose Jaw.
That's the one I'm asking.
Lethbridge.
Or that'd be Swift Current Lethbridge.
Yeah, I would say Swift Current Lethbridge.
Yeah, Swift Current Lethbridge going to be Dante's favorite series to watch. I don't know. I love a good Highway 11 rivalry between the Blades and the Raiders. So hopefully that comes to fruition and is a good series. That one, of course, getting started on Thursday. So hopefully we see a good series out of that. Always seems to be, you know, that weighs a little extra bit. Saskatoon and Prince Albert. The Blades social media team says that's the number one rivalry in the Western Hockey League. Now, I think Regina and Moose Jaw would like to have a word, especially after Saturday night, where Dante, you called that game. Not only was there what looked to be a line brawl, but a goalie fight at center ice. That had to have been one of your more interesting calls.
Well, we'll hear from former Regina Pats general manager and head coach John Paddock later on, but for me, my favorite moment as a kid growing up being an Ottawa Senators fan was watching Lenny Ruff and Brian Murray go at it and seeing Ray Emery fight Marty Biron, and that's the first thing that came to my mind. In fact, right after I called that fight and the game was over, I decided to go on YouTube and rewatch that. So that was kind of neat.
It takes me back to my favorite Regina Pats memory, which is a goalie fight at center ice between David Rieke and Devin Dubnyk of the Kamloops Blazers. That was a sensational fight. I believe we have Tanner Howe now.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there he is. All right.
Tanner, how's the fishing?
Sorry about that, guys. No, I'm not fishing.
Well, are you sure?
Bad service, yeah.
I kind of think you're at the cabin right now ice fishing, Howie.
I wish I was.
You wishes. Are you going sometime soon?
Oh, guys. Not sure yet. I think I might go up a couple days with my dad and brother, but we'll see.
Well, something happened before I got here. I think Ryan wants to say.
Yeah, I was going to ask Mr. Howe, who's the worst driver in the Pats organization, and why is it Dante DiCaria?
Who's the worst driver?
The worst driver on the Pats, and why is it Dante DiCaria?
I don't think it's Dante. I thought he was pretty good.
He's helping you out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Dante.
News for you, I just got pulled over on my way here.
Really?
Yeah.
Speeding, first ever ticket or what?
First ticket, I'm on like six, man.
Oh, man.
I remember last year all the guys were always giving me heck saying I was a bad driver. Honestly, it wasn't even my fault. I know my mom's probably rolling her eyes right now thinking, you always have that line.
Well, it is your fault.
Pretty good.
See, he thinks I'm good, right? We're good.
It is your fault, though, Dante. You got to know the rules of the road in Saskatchewan, man.
So who is the worst, Tanner?
I'd say Logan Peskett. I think he's just like a reckless driver. He's out there.
Write down that plate number to the RPS and RCMP listening in, I guess.
Well, I hope the cop that pulled me over isn't tuning in, because one of the questions he asked me was, where was I going? And I said I was going to do a hit on Sports Cage. And
well, here
he
you
was
are.
Like, oh, who do you work for? I was like, the Regina Pats. I'm across from the office. And he's like, hey, you can't make a U-turn at a green light. And I was like, I'm from Ontario. I had no idea. Apparently, you can't make a U-turn at a green light, which I also don't really understand why. Like, I'll be honest with you. Tanner, did you know that?
Yeah. Like, you know, like, U-turns are illegal, no?
They're not illegal. They're just not legal at green lights, at, like, lighted intersections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, I've definitely pulled a U-ball from time to time, and definitely of them legally. But I know for sure, like, the lighted intersections, that's a no-no.
Yeah. That makes sense.
All right, sounds good. Tanner Howe joining us here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Tanner, you know, 77 points on the season. How do you feel this year went for you?
Yeah, I thought it went pretty good for the most, but I think coming into the season, I had a goal to kind of be consistent with my play and my work ethic and being competitive each and every night, and I think for the most part, I brought that each and every game, and obviously want to produce points-wise and score as many goals as I can. I thought I did a decent job this year, and yeah, overall pretty good.
I know there were some folks, and maybe even some haters, saying that, you know, or questioning what you'd be able to do without Connor Bedard by your side. Do you feel like you silenced some doubters this year with a 77-point season?
Yeah, maybe a little. I think anyone who plays with Connor is going to do good. I mean, he's such an amazing player, and he makes other players great around him. So, I mean, anyone who plays with him is going to do good. But I think there was some outside talk about that, and I think, I mean, only having 6+ points or something it was, I think, yeah, I might have silenced him a bit, so...
I asked your assistant coach, Ken Schneider, this as well, but how long do you hold on to a season like this one before moving on to the next?
Yeah, I mean, it's really always in the back of your head. I mean, when you're training or, I mean, you're skating, it's kind of always in the back of your head, and it kind of gives you that extra motivation. I mean, what it feels like to not make playoffs, lose your last game 11-1, and little things like that. I think guys like us use that as motivation, and kind of pushes us to wake up in the morning and get after it, and kind of just try to get better and come in next season ready to go.
You've tasted what winning's like, obviously not the ultimate prize. Of course, you did win the Hlinka-Gritsky Cup a couple of years ago, so you've essentially done it. You've been there, you've tasted what winning's like, and it can be very addicting. How motivated are you to get back to winning next year with this Pats team?
Yeah, so motivated. I mean, winning at Hlinka and winning tournaments growing up, it's probably the funnest thing ever. And I mean, the celebration you have in the locker room and things like that are the most fun you have in hockey, and that's why hockey's fun. Our whole group's motivated to come back next year and have a bounce back year, and hopefully do that. So
how do you feel about the team looking ahead to next year? Obviously losing some key pieces on the blue line, 3 20-year-olds, but how do you think it's going to shape up next year?
Yeah, I think really good, honestly. I think we got an older group next year. I think our D-core, yeah, we lose 3 20-year-olds, but I guess we got some pretty good young D-men coming in and 2 solid goaltenders, so I like where our group's at right now, and we'll see where it takes us. So.
And potentially Stian Solberg, I believe that's how you pronounce it. He's one of the top European defensemen heading into this year's NHL draft. A chance that he comes to Regina. I believe he's in the same agency group as you, Tanner. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, I was at an agency camp with him past 2 years, actually, in Toronto. And, great kid, and he's really good. I think if he came here, that'd be a treat for us. And he's just such an offensive two-way D-man. He's exceptionally good in the Ozone, so it'd help a lot if he came. So cross your fingers with that.
We saw what he did at the World Juniors with Team Norway. What could he do here in the Western Hockey League?
Yeah, I think the same he did there. I think he was top five in points on his team as a D-man. I think he produces, he scores goals, and I think he would just help our back end, getting pucks up north. And yeah, I think just production-wise and helping us score goals, I think he'd help a lot with that.
We know what those talented European defensemen can do here in the Western Hockey League. We saw that firsthand with Stanislas Foelzel. I'm not saying that Solberg is Stanislas Foelzel, but is it potentially going to be an added, or I don't know how to really ask this question, but you know, kind of comparing the two, how we haven't played with both of them, could we see kind of similar production from Solberg when he comes, hopefully, to the Regina Pats in the Western Hockey League, like we saw with Stanislas Foelzel?
Yeah, definitely. I think they almost play the same game. I think they're both so smart and see the ice so good, and they can move pucks up really good and kind of good first touch in the ozone. I think that's something they both do really good, and obviously Stan had a great career, so hopefully that works out good.
Obviously, the 2024 NHL entry draft is coming up. How do you feel about the opportunity to potentially hear your name get called on the big stage in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, super excited. If that happens, that's super awesome. I mean, something I'm looking forward to, and obviously my family, they're super pumped about it, and it'd be a dream come true, that's for sure.
Tanner, last night I had my U13 AA baseball draft. I feel pretty confident coming out of the draft. I think I got some of the best players. In fact, I believe I got one of the best 2011, 2012 born hockey players in the city of Regina. So that's pretty exciting. And Carter Hepting, was my first overall pick. I was lucky enough to get first overall. Tanner, you came to one of my practices last year. How would you describe me as a coach to some of the listeners?
Yeah, I think he wants the best for the players, and I mean, you push those guys really hard. It's what you need right now. You drive them with your speeches before they go out there. And, yeah, I know, you're a super fun coach. They all giggle around you. You might make jokes, and yeah.
Would you play for me, Tanner?
Yeah, definitely. I'd have to be on my A game all the time, or I should be getting screamed at, though.
I wasn't yelling, was I?
Maybe a couple times.
Really? I just kind of black out, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Ryan, what do you think?
I don't know. I've never seen you coach. I know as a coach myself, I get dialed.
Yeah.
But I really do try to work on the calm approach as a coach. Tanner, how would you think you'd be as a coach?
I think I'd be not bad. I think at the start I'm a bit of a shower guy, so I think I wouldn't be like the mean yelling coach. I think I'd be calm and try to handle the situation as best I could. But
so on a scale of Ryan to Dante, how loud would you get at practice?
On a scale of you two?
On a scale of Ryan to Dante, how loud are you getting at practice?
Not too loud, Dante.
Hey, I'm a positive guy, man.
Yeah, you are.
You've been around me for years. You know how I am.
Yeah.
I just ask a lot of... I ask for a lot of effort and work ethic, and those are kind of the two biggest things that...
Yeah, exactly.
That I ask of, and I think that kind of stems to just me growing up, but also kind of, you know, acting like a sponge around you and Connor Bedard over the last couple of years. Tanner, where does that work ethic come from? Because I know for myself, I think it kind of comes from my parents, but just maybe before we wrap it up, where does that work ethic come from? Because I think somebody listening here would love to hear about, you know, how you've gotten to where you are, because a lot of the time it's what you do off the ice that helps prepare you for a hard season.
Yeah, definitely. I think just growing up, like you said, your parents, and my dad was so big in that. My dad coached me growing up every year, and I remember when I was 8 years old, I'd be getting benched and little things like that because he demanded so much. But I think he was a really big helper. And I mean, getting to play with a lot of good players in my career, like Reg Evans, Logan Nyhoff, and Connor Bedard, and those guys, seeing what they do, and when no one's watching, and I think those guys helped me a lot too.
Well, Tanner, it's great to hear from you, and catch a big one for us next time you get out onto the ice fishing shack.
I'll try my best.
Alrighty, thank you so much, Tanner Howe on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Before we break for news, we have a text. Danny texting in saying you can't make a U-turn at controlled intersections, Dante. Oh. So controlled intersections, you cannot make a U-turn. Trivia question answer.
I didn't make a U-turn at the controlled intersection. What the heck?
It was a green light. That's a controlled intersection.
Oh, well, I shouldn't have passed my my G anyways.
No.
But is it called G here?
No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
Your driver's test is your road exam, I believe.
Well, I failed it like 4 times anyways. So.
I failed it 2 or 3 times. I got refused one time because the horn didn't work. So that's why I couldn't take it the one
the
time.
First.
The horn didn't work. So that's why I got refused by my SGI driving instructor, I guess, out in Strasbourg. So that was fun driving back to Lumsden after getting refused on my driver's ed test. Time for news. We're going to come back with many more guests on the Sports Gauge and Hour 3. Skylar Ackerman, who's stepping away from the competitive women's game in curling. We're also going to hear from former Pats head coach and general manager John Paddock at 5:15. And also our Where Are They Now segment with Rollo Saskatchewan's Keith Ollie. That's all coming up next on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline is Skylar Ackerman. Skylar, how's it going here today?
Not too bad. How are you?
Doing well. Skylar, it was announced yesterday on your curling team's Facebook page that you'll be stepping away from the competitive game. What led you to that decision?
It's kind of been a long time coming. Ever since I went into school when I started my undergrad a couple years ago, I had always planned to pursue further education after I was done. Having so much success this year and having the best teammates around me has made this definitely the toughest decision of my life. But I'm really thankful to have such overwhelming amounts of support from everyone in my circle that have helped me come to this decision, and I know that I'll still be involved with the game in some capacity for the next couple of years before I can get back into the competitive side of things again. So
you're pursuing your further education in the healthcare field. I imagine that's obviously something you're extremely passionate about. Maybe just elaborate on that if you could.
Yeah, I've always kind of envisioned my future being in the healthcare. I find it really rewarding and really meaningful and fulfilling to help people. And it's kind of always been a big passion of mine to be able to help people as much as I can throughout my life. So that's definitely a career path that I can see myself in and see myself being happy with. And hopefully, I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. No one can fault anybody for chasing their dreams, I'll say. Skylar, was it good to get to at least one Scotties before you step away from the competitive game? Obviously, hitting the Scotties in Calgary this year and finishing with a 4-4 record.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an unreal experience in Calgary. Everything I could have dreamed it up to be and could have asked for, and to have my best friends by my side through the whole thing was pretty unbelievable. And it's definitely going to keep that fire lit in me while I step away from the competitive side for a couple of years here.
For sure. And, you know, also got to, you know, experience the Scotties as an alternate with Robin Silvernagel the year before, too. So you did get some experience, you know, at that highest stage as well. Skylar Ackerman joining us here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Skylar, obviously curling a huge part of your life has been for many years now at this point. I imagine at the club level that will continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Still planning to for sure be throwing rocks and probably will join a league and bear whenever I can when my schedule permits with schooling. I'm really thankful for the sport of curling and all the experiences I've been able to have with it, and I don't plan on leaving it forever, that's for sure.
For sure. This isn't a forever thing, just a for now thing. Totally understand that. Maybe just, you know, talk about the school grind that, you know, you go through for a career in healthcare.
Yeah. Up to this point, I've been really fortunate to have been able to receive notes from friends and stuff when I miss class. But moving forward, that workload is just going to be a bit more. And I won't be able to have that much flexibility anymore. But it's all going to be worth it for these next 2 years to step away. And I think I'll come back refreshed and ready to compete again.
Ready to compete again. Also, you know, your teammates are hungry for more as well, as they mentioned in the social media post. Maybe just talk about them as well. You mentioned they're great to have around for that first Scotties. I imagine they'll be pursuing that again this upcoming season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a little hard and different watching from the sidelines here, but I'm excited to see them continue living out their dreams and their goals on the curling ice. And they're my very best friends, and I wish them nothing but the best moving forward for sure.
Alrighty, Skylar Ackerman stepping away from the competitive game of curling. Thank you so much here for the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're talking sports on your way home. This is the Sports Cage on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
And hour three of the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Ryan McNally. Dante DiCaria, flying co-pilot with me here today. Special thanks to the Kinexus Art Center. Get ready for a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19th and 20th at Kinexus Art Center, with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. Trying to get John Paddock here on the phone, and hopefully we get him here shortly. But let's head back to the Capital Ford Lincoln text line to see if there's any more texters. Shelby from Moose Jaw texting in saying she's a big Yankees fan, a New York Yankees fan, because of Derek Jeter.
Nice.
She liked watching Derek Jeter play in the day. And, yeah, I'm hearing that we got John Paddock here on the line. John, where are we catching you here today?
In Manitoba, at my residence in Manitoba.
Yeah, I heard the cabin's pretty nice this time of year. John, is that something you like to do? Kind of, you know, obviously, you know, after the season's over, just kind of, you know, head out, get out of town right away and go do something fun?
Well, I've had this place for close to 15 years, so it's my permanent home. And so, for the first time I was able to do some different things this year, but it's a good place to live.
John, the talk of the town right now is what happened on Saturday night in Moose Jaw with Kelton Pine dropping the gloves with Jackson Unger and Brad Haroff sticking up for his team. I don't want to ask you on your thoughts on that. I wanted to ask you about the first thing that popped in my head when I was calling that. By the way, I've always dreamed about calling a goalie fight and seeing exactly what we saw on Saturday. Just because of one memory that I have as a kid, I grew up as an Ottawa Senators fan. You were, of course, the head coach, and before that, the assistant coach of the Ottawa Senators. And the one thing that came back to my mind was Ray Emery fighting Marty Biron after Buffalo sent out, I think, their fourth line against your top line with Heatley Spezza on the ice. And then things kind of transpired into Peters coming over and fighting Ray Emery, and then later Lindy Ruff and Brian Murray going at it. You were on the bench with Ottawa. Can you take us back down memory lane over, I guess it should be around 15 years ago now. Just take us through what happened back in 2007 with that instance.
How did I know you were going to think of that one? I would say it's a blur. I think it's relatively vivid. I probably need it in front of me to conjure everything that went through our mind. Like we had a real good rivalry with Buffalo. They eliminated us when we were had won the regular season championship in the second round of the next year. I don't know exactly where they finished in the whole league, but they finished basically on top in the East, and we eliminated them. So, you know, there was a lot of intensity there. And, Brian and Lindy. I think they worked together and probably in Florida. I'm not 100% sure of that, but get off there as Brad was doing, sticking up for their team and what they thought maybe transpired against their players or our players, etc. And it was pretty good. It's pretty good comedy in a way to be standing there as they, you know, close by as they went at it verbally. And, you know, and I don't know if that's the same game that Ray pummeled Beer on or not, but Ray Emery is probably the best that I know of, was, rest his soul, the best fighter of goalies that I've seen. I guess Hexie was pretty good, probably, yep. But. You know, Ray could really handle himself. So, again, like I say, I might have more details or thoughts coming back if I had it in front of me watching that game or those instances. But it was quite the entertainment.
Well, it seems like you guys got the better of the Buffalo Sabres. I was just trying to look up what series it was, but I believe you beat Buffalo in overtime. Was it to reach the Stanley Cup Final that year, John?
Yeah, that was the year we beat them. Was you know, it was strange because as I said before, we'd won the league championship and they beat us in five, and the next year they were the better regular season team and we beat them in five. We won I'm sure we won game one in Buffalo 4-1, maybe we won game two in overtime, we won game three at home to go up, and then we lose a game at home, and then we beat them. Elfie scored. We beat them in overtime in game five to go to the finals.
I just look back at that season, and I know obviously it led into you being named the head coach of the Ottawa Senators the year after, but you know, how special was that 2006-2007 Ottawa Senators group? You finished the year with 48 victories. You were second in the Northeast Division that season behind Toronto, in front of Toronto, which had 40 victories, and Buffalo finished the year with 53 wins. They were incredibly talented as well, but what made that Ottawa Senators team so talented? And my second part to that question would be, that line of Alfvérson, Spezza, and Heatley, what was it like to just be a part of that and coach, you know, those three players?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite the team. I think it was, you know, them, as you see with different teams, and not everybody wins because we didn't win as well. But, you know, a group of guys are together for a long time, and it never seems to really happen at say, the age of 21 or something. I mean, Sid won the cup very early in his career at probably around 20, 21. Kane and Taze won real early in their careers. But you see the Tampas, you know, go down in the first round or lose to Columbus one year and, you know, and eventually win it. And now, you know, past their prime, they still find ways to get in the playoffs and be very competitive. And so I think our group reached reached a higher level of maturity, the right combinations. If I go back to the year we lost out, if we hadn't lost Dominic Hasek in the Olympics, I think we would have won the cup.
Yeah.
You know, we all of a sudden lost, you know, arguably, probably one of the top five goalies in history. I think it was just one of those things. And they'd been, you know, Heater had been with Spez and Elfie for a second year, and they were really on fire, and you know, not to go back and ask, I'm not going to comment on it any way, shape, or form. But Brian and I were aghast that we didn't keep Chara.
Yeah.
After the first year together there, and if we had kept Chara, like, it'd have been a whole different ball game if we'd have done that. Add him to our team. You know, he's probably the most the best unrestricted free agent signing in the history of the league. If not him, he's two behind Haas, so, you know, both those guys. So it was a special 3 years there, 4 years with the group that I was involved with.
John Paddock, the former head coach and general manager of the Regina Pats, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. John, when you see, you know, blow-ups like we saw on Saturday night between the Pats and Warriors, I guess from a guy that, you know, experienced that on the bench, what goes through your mind?
I don't know. There's different reasons they've happened over my career. I understand and heard what happened in that game to, you know, put tempers over the top from the Pat side. And, you know, I think that's probably not the first time Moose Jaw has done something like that. So, I mean, in back in the day where there was more fighting and stuff, sometimes it didn't take much at all. There used to be bench clearing brawls for no reason. Like, in, you know, the benches would clear because there was one or two fights going on, and everybody else just stood around and paired up, you know, everybody on the ice, and nothing happened. And so, you know, it's not really part of the game, but in an explosive atmosphere where, you know, players are going at a fast speed and body contact's allowed, and you know, somebody makes a mistake or whatever you want to call it, of looking like they're running up the score, emotions get very high, and it can certainly happen.
Well, and in back in the day, running up the score was a 4-1 game in the second period, right? And
yeah,
obviously it got a little worse for wear than that. Of course, Pats ended up losing that contest 11-1, but you know, like it, I think it's a testament to how the game has changed, right? I mean, I'm sure this happened a lot more, even like earlier in your career as well, right? With a line clearing brawl like this, and then what ends up being a goalie fight at center ice.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, different things started those things, and occurrences. Two players have long memories. I think, you know, it's rare now because the breed of player has changed somewhat, the rules have changed somewhat, but nobody likes to be embarrassed in any way. And, you know, my understanding of top players on the Moose Jaw team in the league going, you know, in a power play when they had a big lead, that's going to cause friction. It's going to cause something to happen. That's the history of the game. It would happen that way in every league from junior to the NHL.
John, I have a kind of an interesting question that I just thought of as you were just speaking, and I just wanted to know, where do those, I guess, gentlemen's rules or those unwritten rules kind of come from? You know, because it feels like that's kind of something that I grew up with, as an example, maybe playing minor hockey, or something that, you know, I don't think was ever taught to me, but it was always just kind of there. Like, I just would have knew it at a young age. You've been around for a very long time. You've coached in the NHL. You've coached in the AHL. You've coached at the junior level. You've played at essentially every single level in North America. Where do you think these gentlemen rules and these unwritten rules kind of come from?
Well, the history, just the history of the game. And I think the possible keyword, at least in my mind, is gentleman.
Yeah.
Like, you know, nobody wants to be disrespected, totally disrespected in any ways. I mean, so that, you know, I think it stems from there. And what is that? Like, you know, it might be slightly different or a little bit different in everybody's mind. It might be physical hockey. A team can, you know, go overboard on winning or losing, you know, later in a game or whatever. And I think that's sort of been taken care of by the leagues now. Like, you just don't go out and physically do something that's over the edge. You know, but I think there's nothing more glaring than. And I didn't watch the game, I didn't look at the summary or whatever, but, you know, if it's in the last 5 minutes of a game and you even have like a 3 or 4 goal lead, very seldom does the top power play of a team come out. It just, you know, it's like you're trying to rub it in, and it just doesn't happen. There's, you know, our sport, I think, is a great sport in that you are willing to pay any price, do anything on the ice to win a game, stop a player, stand up for a teammate. But
after that game's over, and I'm talking about, you know, you don't know everybody on an opposing team real close by any means, but after that game, you could, it used to be you could go for a beer with them and sit down and have a laugh and shake hands, and it was over. Now it's, you go have a shake of some sort and you have a stretch and whatever, but like, it's like, it just doesn't work that way. And I think it's that way in all sports. Like, maybe you can't help it if some pitcher grooves one and somebody hits a grand slam, the score is already 10-1, that's sport. But I think, you know, you see substitutions in football and basketball, you know, when those kind of things, situations prevent or are out in the open, I think it's, you know, it doesn't happen. It doesn't mean it's not big scores. But the power play is one instance that you can definitely ruffle another team's feathers over the top in certain situations.
John, last question before we let you go. Obviously, Pats fans here in the Queen City have been following Connor Bedard very closely. It's funny, you go to a Pats game and you see so many Chicago Blackhawks t-shirts, jerseys, and hats. It's just incredible on just how he's expanded globally. I mean, I think when we were, you know, going through our trip through Alberta, there were people wearing Blackhawks jerseys as well. And I'm sure as you saw when you went to Chicago to go watch him play, you saw a lot of Regina Pats jerseys as well. This season, John, 56 points in 58 games as an 18-year-old, 21 goals and 35 assists. You've seen him play live. You've watched his games on TV. What's your, I guess, analysis on how he has played this year for some fans here in Regina?
Well, I think he's... it's hard to say when you know him like we do. It's hard to say that he exceeded expectations, because, you know, nothing that he does really, we've figured out or learned that nothing he does should surprise you. So in that way, is it expected? Yeah, I mean, I think somebody was asking me last year, and I got asked this a lot, and I really don't have any answers for it, so I tried to be, you know, pretty conservative. But what would be a good year for him next year? Well, a good year would be, I said, like 30 and 30. So he's already at that, and has missed whatever he's missed, you know, 10, 11 games, 12 games. So he was exceeding that, and I was just didn't know what to say. That's why I put those numbers out there. But what he's done, I've had different people say to me that are involved in hockey or know hockey, that what he's done with so little to play with is incredible. And we've used that word to describe him before, and amazing, and all, you know, all these different adjectives that that come with him. So for me, I guess I'll just say one more thing. It started in the first game of the season, watching the game on television against Pittsburgh. You know, it was no surprise that Sid snapped the face-off on him immediately, and he didn't have a very good night in the face-off thing. But I watched the game, and they managed to win the game. And as I watched that game, you know, I'm thinking, and I'm more old school, and it's an eye test than analytics, but there's a place for both. But I was thinking, like, you know, just watching him, it's like, you know, he did the same things in that game as he did for us.
Wow.
I'm standing on the bench, and I'm like, wow, like, how can he do that? And then, you know, the leading into the second game in Boston, you know, the commentators got to have something to spew and stuff, and they have all these different stats and analytics, and to me, there's a good place for them in hockey, but really just verify what you see. And, like, he had more puck possession time in the offensive zone that game than anybody else on the ice. And that's including Sid. And that just verified to me what I thought watching the game. It was like watching him play junior, where, you know, probably 90% of the games he played, he dominated in a lot of areas. So he's done nothing to dispel what everybody thought as his career moves ahead.
John, time always we're always against the clock here on 620 CKRM, but great to have you on the show. We'd love to have you on again sometime soon.
All right, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much. John Paddock, former Pats head coach and general manager joining us here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Time to break for news. Corey Atkinson's looking over at me at the booth, and I don't like those eyes. He's a little scary. He's a little mean or mad at me right now for going over, but we heard from John Paddock. We gotta go long when it's John Paddock. We'll hit the news and be back with more next on the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Sports Cage. Now back to the action on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Welcome back. We get set to wrap up the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage here on 620 CKRM, which is brought to you by Kinexus Art Center. Get a taste of fun at 2024's Taste of Spring, April 19th and 20th at Kinexus Art Center with 150 products all under one roof. See you at the center. Brian McNally, Dante DiCaria joining you here on your Wednesday afternoon. Time now for a special segment we have here on the Sports Cage. Every Wednesday for Floor Coverings International, it's Where Are They Now? Again, for Floor Coverings International, need new floors? Get the stars of flooring. Floor Coverings International, locally owned, mobile flooring showrooms, thousands of choices, FCLfloors.com. We are joined by Pat's skills coach, Keith Ollie. Keith, how's it going here today?
Oh, not too bad. I just snuck out of a rink here. My son's playing hockey, so that's good. I got a little break from a rink for once.
Well, we can't keep you from the rink too far because we're going to be talking a lot of hockey here, Keith. Beginning in Rollo, how was it growing up on the farm learning the game of hockey?
Yeah, I guess it was the same as a lot of other hockey players from Saskatchewan came early and grew up in a small town. I mean, it's a small town kind of out the middle of nowhere, but at the same time, we're only 25, 30 minutes from Regina. So, but no, it was good. You learn to appreciate the little things growing up out on the farm and the rink's always open and it would be coming home from school and right to the rink and you'd skate for 2 hours with your buddies. And that's kind of where you get that extra ice time maybe that maybe helps out some of the kids Rather than that, yeah, it's seeing my kids go through it now, it's a little bit different and still appreciate growing up out there and being able to teach them kind of to appreciate the little things in life maybe.
From Rollo, you play your AAA in Notre Dame, then you get to Brandon to play for the Wheat Kings at a time where you didn't just play for Brandon, you played for a province. That had to be pretty unique.
I still remember going into that draft and we were kind of under the impression that Regina was going to pick me actually and it ended up being going to Brandon. So right away I was maybe a little bit disappointed having to move away from home, but it turned out it was just a great fit for me going out there and McCrimmon was everything there, the owner, the GM, the coach. He might as well have been the bus driver. So he once I kind of developed a relationship with him, he was like my second father out there, and it was a great time I had. It's a cool little town out there and you get to know everybody and you make lifelong friends playing like in a place like that for 4 years. So yeah, nothing but good memories playing out in Brandon and they're my second favorite team now, I guess.
Well, Keith, during your time with the Brandon Wheat Kings, you had the opportunity to play with some great players. Braden Shen, to me, probably being at the top of the list, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark Stone was also on that team during your time, Scott Glennie, and Matt Calvert as well. What was it like to kind of have those teammates along your side when you went on to be, the captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings in your final season, which eventually led to playing for Team Canada at the World Juniors?
Yeah, well, I was actually just chatting with Braden Shen here today, but yeah, it's different talking about those guys like they're, obviously they went on to be superstars, but it's different for me because I was older as they were coming in, and to see, like, I just remember them coming in, just young guys kind of learning the ropes and seeing how they've developed now, it's pretty cool. Like, yeah, that line was Braden Shen, Matt Calvert, and Scott Glennie, and they were 16 and they were playing like 19-year-olds when they first came in. It was just unbelievable to see them go and looking back, there was quite a few good players to go through there, and it was like I said, McCrimmon ran such a good show there and developed them properly, and it's great to see guys move on like that.
World Juniors that year, the D pairing of you and Tyler Myers, nicknamed the Twin Towers. That had to have been a pretty fun team to be on, winning gold in 09 in Ottawa. Take us back to that if you could.
Yeah, I was never really touted to make that team, so that's one of the, you know, that's what's made it extra exciting for me. Was I went to the summer camp and I was kind of on the outside looking in, and for whatever reason they thought they'd put me and Tyler together, and we meshed a little bit, and turned out we could play some good defense against some high-powered offense. So I think that kind of caught the coach's eye, and you know, Tyler was going to be on the team no matter what, but I think they just saw that we played well together and ended up taking me as well. So that was, you know, that was a pretty big honor for me to all of a sudden be in that mix and then play lots too, and for that tournament to be at home here in Ottawa, that was, you know, it was just so exciting, every game with all the fans, and I remember that like it was yesterday. I had the whole family down, and everybody remembers the Everly goal and everything else, and you know, it was quite the way to win, but it couldn't have turned out any better.
You were a fourth round pick by Calgary in 2007 in the NHL draft. Hearing your name getting called, or getting that phone call from the Flames, what was that like for you?
Yeah, that was another pretty uncertain time in my career. That draft is when you're 17, and I was just kind of learning my body and learning how to play the game at the junior level at that time. So I didn't really know where I was going to fit in with NHL teams, but at that time they were still shut down defensemen, and they were a little bit more rough and tumble than what they are nowadays. So Calgary liked that style of play, and so when they called me, it was Daryl Sutter there, and I knew that he would probably like me if I got there and kind of showed him what I had. So that was exciting for me, and I only got to play with their organization for about half a year though, and then I was on the way to Toronto in the trade, so never got to play a game for Calgary, just an exhibition game. So,
well, I was going to ask about that trade too. I mean, Daryl Sutter likes his Western guys, that's not a secret, but so does Brian Burke. That trade to the Toronto Maple Leafs with Dion Phaneuf, what was it like to, you know, get to play hockey in the biggest hockey market, both at the AHL level and NHL level?
Yeah, no, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit overwhelmed. All of a sudden you're playing in the AHL in Abbotsford, you're not a big show in town or anything, and then all of a sudden you hear that you're traded with, well, it was six or seven other NHLers, and I was kind of the only minor leaguer or only other guy that wasn't an NHLer thrown in the deal. So all of a sudden you're on your way to Toronto, and you're right into the ACC the next day and meeting all the guys and the staff, and I was pretty overwhelmed to start with, but as you kind of got comfortable with the organization, you just start to realize like it really is the center of the hockey universe. It's just, you know, every day it's just something new, and there's tons of pressure, but I mean, as I played there a little bit more and more, you see the guys like Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, and they embrace it after a while, and it's kind of cool to see. And actually, one of the guys that I would always talk about was Naz Kadri. We actually played our first game, I think, in the same game and kind of came up together a little bit, although he was a bit more of a star than I was, but I always respected how he kind of had that tough skin that could handle the criticism and could handle the pressure. And you know, that's, I always think of that in Toronto, where if you could develop that, you could really embrace that pressure and run with it. And you see some of the guys that succeed there, that's, you know, they all develop that, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, Keith, I mean, I think you and I have talked about this off mic a lot, and that was a crazy trade. I remember exactly where I was. I was coming off the ice in a little small town just outside of Ottawa, and I remember my coach coming up to me and saying, the Toronto Maple Leafs got Dion Phaneuf, and I was just so excited, and then I think they would have got J.S. Giguere as well at the same time. But you made your NHL debut on November 13th, 2010, but the one thing I would like to ask you about is your first career NHL fight against Scotty Hartnell, who played for the Prince Albert Raiders here in the Western Hockey League, formerly of the Philadelphia Flyers. And from what I'm reading online, you earned the nickname Muhammad Ali. Just tell us about that.
Well, that was a funny one too, actually, because I remember when Scotty Hartnell was playing with the Warriors in Moose Jaw, And somehow my dad had a connection with him. Maybe he knew his dad or his grandpa. Or I don't remember what it was. But anyways, we got to go down after one of the games and meet Scotty. So I was always looking up to him when I was a kid, and then had met him a few times before we played in the NHL. But then when we finally played in the NHL, I just remember running into him in the corner, and right away he looked up and threw his gloves off. So we went at it pretty good, and I guess I got the best of him that day. So they were calling me Muhammad Ali, and it was it probably didn't take too long till I was getting knocked down, and then they were probably wishing they weren't calling me that.
What do you like more, the first NHL goal or first NHL fight?
Oh, I'd say goal. I mean, I was never...
Ah, Keither.
I scrapped a bit in the NHL, but I was never a heavyweighter.
You had the belt, no?
No, I remember. I didn't score many goals, so I can remember a few of them anyway.
In that 2010-2011 season, at the tail end of it there, you were an everyday NHLer for a good chunk of that season after Francois Beauchemin got dealt. That had to have been a pretty cool experience to be an everyday NHLer in a market like Toronto.
Yeah, that was probably... Well, I had a good stretch in Tampa there too, but that was probably the height of my career for sure. Just the game the way it was kind of before the rules started to change, and obviously playing a ton, and looking back, although I thought I played pretty well, I probably was playing a little bit too much. I mean, I think that's maybe been part of the criticism of Toronto, was they're bringing young guys in and maybe playing them a little bit too much right away. I mean, you look at Luke Shen and kind of how that worked too, but looking back, it was unreal that I was playing that much, but I almost wish that I would have played a little bit less and kind of learned the NHL a little bit better before I had that much responsibility. But no, yeah, like you say, I was playing over 20 minutes a night at times and playing against all the best players, and looking back, and it's still hard to believe that I was in that situation, but it's pretty cool to think about.
Sports Cage, where are they now for Floor Coverings International? Floor Coverings International has one of the highest ratings in the business, 4.8 stars, so go with the stars of flooring. Visit fclfloors.com today. Then the trade to Tampa Bay, of course, Keith. What was that like, playing hockey in Florida?
Oh, it was unreal. When I retire, whenever I slow down or whatever, that's where I'd like to have a place down there and around that Tampa area. It's just, for me, it was so many things that I liked to do. There was golf and fishing and if you wanted to unwind, or spring training, baseball was down there. Or, there's just so many things
like
to
my
do
spot.
Where you can, yeah, you could just, you walk to the rink in flip-flops and some guys would say, well, is it hard to stay focused on hockey and whatnot? But honestly, it's easier. You can leave the rink and you can kind of unwind and your mind can kind of take a break. And then when you come back to the rink, you're ready to rock. And it was just, there's so much less external pressure there, I guess, too, that they could kind of sit on players and develop them the way that they should be developed. And I think that's kind of how you've seen, how they were so good there, and they're still good. But, players like Victor Hedman, he comes into the league and honestly at the start of his career he wasn't really that shiny. He made a lot of mistakes but they just kept with him, and they knew he was going to turn out to be a player. Well, it wasn't much longer, and he's one of the best defensemen in the league. So I think that was Yzerman running such a good organization there too. So I think between being such a cool city and being such a good organization, it just really didn't get much better.
It's funny, if you go on YouTube, you can find like 2008 or 2009 leaked draft, coverage behind the scenes with Brian Burke being offered from Tampa Bay Victor Hedman in exchange for the rights to Nazem Kadri and Luke Shen, which in hindsight would have been a steal for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but that didn't happen. Keith, I just kind of remember you walking through the doors two summers ago, the first time that I had the opportunity to meet you with the Regina Pats, and I had to kind of like rub my eyes a little bit because I was like, is that Keith Ollie? Did he just pass me? And then I searched it up. I was like, holy smokes, this guy's retired. He's only 33. And I was really surprised to see you walk through those doors, because I really still thought that you were still playing professionally overseas. Somebody for myself, I'd always kind of followed your career. I always enjoyed watching you play in the NHL, and I know I've told you that off mic as well. What made you want to, hang up the skates and move back home and pursue the farm life?
Well, I guess, you know, a combination of the hockey side of things in North America. Like I say, when the rules changed, it kind of, you know, it was definitely taken away from my style of game for sure. So that kind of led into playing into the NHL or the AHL for a little bit, and once it kind of looked like my dream of playing in the NHL was kind of dwindling down, then I looked to Europe and ended up in Munich, Germany, and thought I'd play there for one or two years and ended up staying for four. We just absolutely loved it there and had a great time, won a championship, and was able to live in Munich, which was just an unreal place to live too. So my wife would probably still be there if she could. But yeah, so anyways, you know, once we played 4 years there, we started having kids and we just kind of realized it was kind of a good time to go. And our farm business here at home, Dad was getting older and it was kind of just time for me to come home and kind of take that over. We've ended up building a house out at Rollo there and raising our kids kind of the way that I was raised. And I kind of, you know, we just kind of valued that, having the family in one spot, and my body wasn't feeling any better getting older either. So it was just kind of just seemed like the right play. And you know, looking back now, I don't miss playing hockey all that much. I miss playoffs for sure. And I just miss going to the rink every day and seeing the team and the camaraderie. I think that was probably the thing I missed the most. So, but overall, I think we're pretty happy with where we are now. So,
well, Keith, you get to the rink every day now with the kids too. So that's a pretty cool experience to say that you get to do it as a player and now you get to do it as a dad. Never enough time, yep. Keith. Thank you so much for the time here on the Sports Cage.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Keith Ollie from the Regina Pats and also from Rollo, Saskatchewan, joining us for our Where Are They Now segment on the Sports Cage. Time now for our clutch performer, if we could get the clip from last night's Edmonton Oilers-Winnipeg Jets game.
Dobbs, Oilers changing. Nugent Hopkins leads it. Zach Hyman cuts backhander stop. He got the rebound and he scored.
That is Zach Hyman, who is tonight's clutch performer with an overtime winner, his 51st goal of the year in Winnipeg last night. He gets our clutch performer for Nick's service in Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson, Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fent dealer. Call 781-1077. That's going to put a close on the Sports Cage for today. If you missed any part of the show, it will be posted a little later on here tonight on 620ckrm.com and anywhere else you find your podcasts of choice. I'm Ryan McNally, Dante DiCaria, my co-host today. Thank you all so much for tuning in to the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage here on 620ckrm.
Today's Sports Cage has come to a close. Miss a segment? Download or stream the podcast now at sportscage.ca. Get your sports straight from the source. 620 CKRM.